Right. Hello, everyone. Thank you all for being here today. Welcome to our parent session hosted with Best Buddies Texas and Allison from the Consolidated Planning Group. We are so excited to have you here today. My name is Courtney. I am a program manager here in the North Texas office for Best Buddies. And if you don't know, Best Buddies is a global nonprofit, and our mission is to provide more inclusion opportunities for individuals of all ages, all abilities. Here in Texas, we have offices in the North Texas region, Houston, and Austin. Many of us know Best Buddies for having chapters in schools. One of our big pillars is friendship. And so we form one-to-one friendships for people with a disability and for those without a disability. And again, this is all ages, all abilities. So if you would like to learn more about our organization or if you would like to get involved with your local chapter, we would love to have you. I will put our link in the chat in a moment. But parent sessions is something that we do monthly just to provide resources and supports for our parents. Transition is a huge time in life where you navigate choices and resources after school. And a lot happens when you turn 18. So today we have Allison joining us to talk about exactly all of that, special needs planning, what to prepare for, what to look for, and how to set your loved one up for success. So thank you all for being here today, and we will monitor the chat as we go. Allison, I will pass it off to you.
Thanks, Courtney. It's always a pleasure to be partnering with you again, and we love the Best Buddies program. So if you guys are not familiar with the Best Buddies program, definitely check it out. Definitely cool. I always like to start with some housekeeping items. We are in webinar mode today, which means that we can't see you or hear you, but we do know you're there, and we're glad that you're here. Today's webinar is being recorded, and everyone who is registered will get a copy of today's slides as well as a link to the recording. Also, all of our past recordings will live on our YouTube channel, the Consolidated Planning Group YouTube channel. There's over 300 recordings out there for planning, for special needs, every topic that you could possibly imagine. So you can check that out and kind of check out the ones for the stuff in the planning stage that you guys are at now. We invite all of you to put your questions in the chat box today as we're going through. Courtney's going to watch that chat box and we're going to answer just as many questions as we can. And from a time perspective, if you're planning, we're going from 12 to 1 today. We will be finished by 1 o'clock. So today we are talking about really launching your special needs teen into adulthood, and we're going to talk about some of the key things that you should keep in mind as you're making this transition. You know, transition is such a loaded word, and it means different things to different people. And on, you know, we've got transition of school and education. We have transition of medical care. We've been living in the cocoon of pediatric medicine, where, you know, everybody really talks together and it's really comprehensive. And we start moving into adulthood and things change with our medical care, which is it's especially important for our kids, especially on the spectrum, kids that struggle with change, things like that. They've got new doctors, new way of doing things. And so that's part of it. And we're not really going deep and wide on the, you know, on the medical side of things today, but a lot of other areas that we're going to hit on. So Consolidated Planning Group, we are a holistic special needs financial planning firm. We're nationally certified Social Security advisors, members of the Special Needs Planning Academy. This is what we do. Special needs families are who we work with. I come to you as a professional with 30 years of experience, but also baptized by fire, four kids, and two with special needs. So I can say that I eat, sleep, and breathe this both personally and professionally. A lot of these webinars were honestly born out of my own frustration when my children were transitioning. And I know this stuff backwards and forwards. And I would say that the journey is difficult and bumpy. All of the the I's that we, have to dot and the T's that we have to cross to make sure that we, keep our kids eligible for state and federally funded programs, programs that we might not even be aware of because our kids have basically never qualified for anything before because you made too much money. That all changes when they turn 18. So being aware of the various programs and things that we need to be signing up for and getting on the list and things like that are going to be very, very important during this time. We put together protection plans for families, lifetime care plans, transition planning. We set up ABLE accounts, and we do a lot of advocacy through our webinars like this one today. If anybody is joining us through our podcast and they want a copy of the slides, you can reach out to us at contact@cpgcares.net, and we can get you a copy of the slides to go along with the podcast as well. When it comes to special needs planning, it is a very nuanced profession. There's 263,000 financial advisors in the U.S., but less than 0.1% actually focus on special needs. And when it comes to special needs planning, your situation is specialized, and it is important that we have money in the right buckets to preserve that eligibility for state and federally funded programs. So it's not that the other financial advisors out there aren't licensed or they're not smart. They're highly intelligent, highly skilled advisors. They're just not, they just don't have any background in special needs. So it's really important as you're planning to keep that in consideration. So the tips for launching your special needs in child into adulthood. This is a scary time for a lot of people. And, they start their freshman year and they're 13, 14 years old. And you think you have all of this time and then you blink and they're a senior or they're getting, ready to move out of their transition program. We're hitting that 18 mark. And it can be a scary time for a lot of families. A lot of times also it's the future of where do we go from here? A lot of our kids, I would say in fairness, are maybe behind their peers. Where are they? Are they behind their peers from an educational perspective? A lot of them may not be behind from an educational perspective. Maybe they're academically gifted, but from a maturity perspective, some of the frontal lobe, development issues and things like that, they may be 2 to 4 years behind their peers. So although they are in the 18-year-old body, 18-plus body, their brains may not be functioning where they need to yet to move on to that next step that might be a traditional path. So we always say, let's have realistic expectations. Let's not be Facebook parents where we're looking at all of the achievements that all the other kids out there, our friends and friends on Facebook and things like that are doing. We want to meet our kids exactly where they are. It's not about, looking back. It's about looking forward, and they are where they are. They're not behind. I mean, I think a lot of times we're thinking about how behind someone might be. And I think it's just really understanding exactly where they are. What are those challenges and strengths that that they face with their diagnosis? What is the next step? Is it a traditional path? You can argue what is normal anyway, or is it a non-traditional path? And there's a lot of things that we can consider. Some of our kids, I know, will never drive, but some of them will. Maybe, a non-traditional path is delaying that driver's license. There are a lot of disability driving schools, like behind the wheel programs. Memorial Hermann is one that I know that they have them, but most major hospital systems, think about a person who's had a stroke. Before they go back driving, they do these assessments to see, could they be safe behind the wheel again? Well, these assessments are also, an assessment that you can have done. If you have a child that may have the capacity to drive, but you don't know if they could be safe or not, this is an assessment that you can have done. And that assessment will tell you, A, would they be safe behind the wheel, or what are their deficits that, kind of the gaps that need to be closed in order for them to be safe behind the wheel. Once you have these assessments, these hospitals that that do those assessments, they're often covered by your group health insurance. That will tell you. So if you get the green light on that assessment, then the next step would be to hire a disability driving school where they will practice with your loved one behind the wheel and help close the gaps on the deficits that were identified so that way they can be safe. So there are a lot of disability driving programs around the state. I mean, there's several in the greater Houston area that we're aware of, but you can kind of just reach out and you can Google that and kind of do a search to find out the ones. Oftentimes, the hospitals that do the computer-based module sessions and assessments, they often know who the behind-the-wheel driving instruction players are in your area. So if you're doing that assessment, be sure to ask them about that as well. So trade school, community college. Not everybody has to have a four-year degree or a two-year degree. There are a lot of licenses or certificates, various programs that are out there. So if your kid isn't good with math, who cares? There's a lot of things out there that a person that's not good with math and science that they can still absolutely do, get a license, get a certificate. The community college, they also, all schools, all colleges have like an introduction to college studies. The community colleges have that too. And that whole course is designed to kind of shed some light on what it means to be a college student and what the expectations are, because the expectations change drastically from going from high school, whether it's a public high school, homeschool, or private school. You know, the expectations change in college, and how things work definitely change. So I do recommend that course, and it is actually a 4-credit course. So some people, maybe school is not their thing. Maybe they've always disliked school. It's not been a success story for them. There's the Texas Workforce Commission Vocational Rehab for individuals with a disability that have an impediment to employment. These programs start as early as age 14. They go from 14 to 22 for adolescents, and then they continue on past age 22. So for vocational rehab, all of your public schools have a vocational rehab counselor, so you can call the counseling department and kind of get plugged into your vocational rehab counselor there. And furthermore, you can you can self-submit under Start My VR. If you put in your search bar Start My VR, it's going to go to the website where you can self-submit your student to get involved with this program. A lot of what happens with this program is they're going to do assessments of the individual to find out what are the individual's impediments to employment. And then they're going to put training things in place to help close the gap on those impediments to employment. They between Texas Workforce Solutions, Texas Workforce Commissions, there's job coaches. They have programs. If the individual is still in high school, they have pre-employment training services and summer earn and learn programs as well. In the summer earn and learn program, they get a stated wage. They get so many hours a week over the summer. They have an actual job to go to that's in the program. It's a pretty good program, and it's a good way. What we say is to dip your toe in to see how a work environment might work out for your loved one. The Department of Labor has a lot of registered apprenticeships, and these are programs where they can get paid and learn while they're learning a specific trade. So you can go to the Department of Labor website and type in registered apprenticeships. These are all across the country. So if you're joining us from out of state, they are all across the country, and you can kind of look at those for your neck of the woods as well. So some of the things that we think about is a reduced college course load. I think our brains are trained to say that, a full time college course load is 12 hours. Well, maybe some of our kids can't handle 12 hours. Maybe they could handle one course, and maybe that's a 3-credit course. I know ideally, if from a payroll perspective and paying for college and higher education, the sooner we get them out, the sooner it's off the payroll. But But we want to set them up for success. So if they do one course and they ace it and they did well and they sailed through that, then that's your cue that maybe the next semester that they could take two courses or maybe three and get up to that 12-hour course load if that's what it means. But there's no, you know, we don't have to finish this in 4 years or 2 years. If it takes us longer time to get there, there's online courses, there's in-person courses, and there are lots of supports at the community college as well as the university for individuals with disabilities. And there are a lot of programs out there specifically for kids that learn differently, including kids that have intellectual disabilities. And when I speak of intellectual disabilities, I'm speaking more of IQ maybe below 70. So just know that I think we talk to a lot of parents and they feel like their situation is dire or hopeless, or they don't see the writing on the wall that, you know, that this, any of these things could work. But some of our kids, they just need to stay in the public high school. Our kids can stay in the public high school to age 22. There are 18 plus programs. There are transition programs. There are, you know, life skills on, you know, how to be more of an independent adult. And all of those things, especially from a maturity level, if our kids are behind in maturity, these are all things that are worth considering. One of the things that I like to mention to families is that we have a lifetime to pay for these kids. If we have a special needs child that has care needs for the rest of their life, not just the rest of ours, we have a lifetime to pay for these kids. If the public school is a good setting and your child is thriving there and things are going well and they're behind from an educational standpoint or a maturity standpoint, there's nothing wrong with them staying in the public school programs or these 18 plus programs and then looking at next later. Because during that time, they're growing their skills, they're learning, and they're moving themselves forward, and they're gaining the maturity that they're going to need to be successful in other settings. So let's talk about finding a good fit. So one of the things that we often talk about, and I think it's careful planning goes into this, is what's next? So the next, what does next look like? And looking at what's next long before it's time for it to come up is important, because what we really want to avoid is that kids are coming home from the public school, they're ending public school, and then there isn't a next path. Excuse me. So thinking about schools and colleges, extracurricular activities, work settings, career path, whatever that is, but whatever it's not, we don't want it to be they come home and they've lost their community, they've lost their tribe, their friend group, a place where they feel like they belong, and they're sitting at home and playing video games, right? That's what we want to avoid. And so some of these things, when we're thinking of a non-traditional path, you know, there are outside private pay transition programs as well, and they day programs, there's residential programs. These day programs, you can kind of tailor them to a schedule that works for you. Maybe it's a couple of days a week, maybe it's 5 days a week, but they have all different types of schedules out there that can kind of go around your schedule as well. So if we're thinking about higher education, the community college or the university, one thing that it is important to know, and you guys can check out the college planning for special needs. We have an entire webinar on that topic that talks about the various schools and programs that that are out there for individuals with disabilities. But one thing to know is that everything changes for higher education. So the cocoon that we've been living in the public school, it all changes. Your accommodations. A lot of our families have kids that are on an IEP. They may have accommodations in the school. Higher education institutions are not obligated to honor your IEP or your accommodations that you have in the public school. It is a separate application that you're going to have to do. So one thing that I would say is if your path is higher education for your student, whenever that may be, the first and very, very important thing that you're going to want to do is evaluate the Office of Disability for each of the schools or institutions that you're looking at for your student. each of them have an office of disability. Some of them call them ability services, disability services, ODS. They have all kinds of different names that they call them. But every institution has an office of disability, and they're not all created equally. So on their website, they will tell you what do you have to do to apply for accommodations. They typically have an application. A lot of the schools, and again, this is not all created equally either, a lot of the schools request testing that has been updated in the last 3 to 5 years. So we're talking about some of the neuropsych testing or learning disability testing, things like that, that indicate what accommodations might be necessary for a student. We have kids that have working memory issues, processing speed delays. Maybe they need a note taker. Maybe they need a testing center where they can take their exams in a non-distracted environment. Those are to name a few. I've seen voice-to-text recognition software, which I find is helpful for definitely kids with working memory issues and processing speed delays. There's a lot of reading in higher education. There's a lot of papers and things like that. And that voice-to-text recognition software, as well as audiobooks, can be a real game changer when it relates to the success and possibility of success for your student. So you're going to want to determine what the accommodations are necessary, and work with the school or the institution to find out, are they able to provide those accommodations? Larger schools have more software, more supports and things like that. And it's not that the smaller schools don't have them. Some schools have these huge, giant offices of disability that are awesome, and others are run by one or two people. And so I learned that when we were, touring these schools, when we were looking for one of my own kids. And I would say, if you know, which I knew, my kid needs accommodations to be successful in a higher education setting, the Office of Disability and the quality of them was non-negotiable for us. So even though we may have found some schools that we really liked, if the Office of Disability couldn't provide the accommodations that we needed or we wanted or we were looking for, they were off the list. We were on to the next one. And so so I'd say do that early. The other thing that you, and the reason you want to do this early, is just because you apply for accommodations today and you submit your updated testing that you've had in the last 3 to 5 years doesn't mean that they're going to approve them in 24 hours. So what we don't ever want to happen is that the student is starting classes with both hands behind their back because the accommodations aren't in place yet. So don't wait, do it early. So as far as the updated testing is concerned, if you have a student that is enrolled in that vocational rehab program that I was speaking about earlier, oftentimes they've done that testing. And vocational rehab pays for that testing. This testing could be $3,500. It's not free. And it's often not covered by insurance, but it could be covered by VR. And so that's one way to look at that. And sometimes the testing, getting that testing done, if you haven't done testing in years, the people that do the testing may be behind, so you're going to want to get that scheduled early. And then once you do the test, sometimes they're behind in getting you the results. So just keep that in mind. And the last thing that I wanted to mention on testing, some families have kids with a disability and it doesn't change. They have an intellectual disability. These are their deficits, you know, and it's been the same. So what I have also seen, and you can ask each of the schools, each school, again, is going to have their own, they're going to have their own rules, but I've seen schools take outdated testing when it was accompanied by a letter from a physician, either a psychologist, a psychiatrist, the primary care physician, basically saying, please accept the old testing as the diagnoses are the same, person has been under my care for this many years, and these are the accommodations that are necessary. I've definitely seen schools accept that. So before you run out and drop $3,500 on the testing, check that first. So one thing that is frustrating when it comes to accommodations, when it comes to higher education, even if your kid is under 18, they need a FERPA. This is a a form that is going to be necessary for your student to sign to release information to you. And so in working with the offices of disability, most of them want to work with your student, not mom and dad, not any of the helicopter parents, which we're all probably guilty of from time to time. But so helping your student navigate and work with these offices of disability will be important, and getting involved in the beginning is going to be important. The FERPA is going to be necessary. The other thing that I want to mention is that it is also important as we're thinking about transitioning and turning 18, for families. I know that there's a lot of consideration when it comes into guardianship, partial guardianship, alternatives to guardianship, such as power of attorney, healthcare power of attorney, supported decision-making agreements. So these are things that you're going to want to check on too, because some schools will not take a student that is under full guardianship, not all schools, but you're going to have to ask that question. And so we also recommend that healthcare power of attorney and power of attorney for any of your college students, including your neurotypical students, as well as any aging family members. When we send our 18 plus kid off to college and there's an accident, or there's a mental health crisis, if there's not a healthcare power of attorney and power of attorney in place, they're not even going to tell you where they took your kid. It could be a needle in this haystack. So it's really important to get those documents. Courtney, do we have a question?
Yes. Teresa was wondering if we would be talking about guardianship. So I know you talked briefly about it, but are there any other presentations that you have where they can dive deep into it?
So we'll just, you know, just very briefly, but on our Consolidated Planning Group YouTube channel, there are multiple presentations from multiple attorneys on guardianship and the alternatives to guardianship for the state of Texas. And it kind of walks through what the process is. But in general, the guardianship process can begin 6 months prior to your child turning 18. It doesn't have to, but if you're wanting the guardianship to be in place by the time they turn 18, having intentional conversations with the attorney ahead of time is important. If you're way past that time and you wonder if you still can, you absolutely still can. It doesn't have to start 6 months prior. So, but check out the Consolidated Planning Group YouTube channel for the past webinars on that. They're very, very informative. And guardianship, you know, in the state of Texas, the law states the least restrictive, most appropriate for the ward, WARD, for the individual. So one of the litmus tests that I suggest to people is, you know, some people say, I don't want guardianship, but they may have a child that has an intellectual disability that does not have the capacity to understand what they are signing if they were going to sign a power of attorney or a healthcare power of attorney. And the key is that you don't have to know what is needed. Okay, some people, it's a slam dunk. For other people, it's not a slam dunk. Their kids are on the autism spectrum, they're ADHD, they're immature for their age, but we're still hopeful and optimistic that they're going to get there. And so a lesser restrictive option is usually better, because if you need something more restrictive in the future, then you can always go back and you know, get what is needed. But then there are other families that it's clear, it is absolutely clear that a full guardianship is necessary. Okay. So the other thing is, if your child is going to work, reasonable accommodations are required if it doesn't pose undue hardship. You can look at this at the Department of Labor and the Job Accommodation Network as well. And again, if you're working with the Workforce Solutions Office or a VR counselor, they are well versed in this and in those types of supports as well. Okay, so when it comes to educational options post high school, this is just a few of them. We don't work for them, they don't work for us. These are a few of the programs. And if, again, if you want to go deep and wide on the programs, check out the College Planning for Special Needs on the Consolidated Planning Group YouTube channel, because we're going to go a lot deeper and wider. Some of these programs are on there because they have specific programs. They could be license programs, they could be certificate programs, they could be degree programs, but they have specific programs for individuals with disabilities, or they have a pretty great Office of Disability that is relatively great to work with. this isn't the full list. We have a full list, but this is just some examples of the programs that we know are out there. So what you're going to want to do, I always say, I'm sorry in advance, but you're going to want to create a spreadsheet, because all of these programs are not created equally. When the application process opens up, it's not always the same. How many students they take, how are they meeting? Are they meeting in person? Are they meeting in line? Is this a two-year program, a nine-month program, a one-year program? You're going to want to do the research and know the ones that you're interested in. And I always suggest applying for more than one, because you might not get your first choice. Apply for the ones that might be, might be relative to the interest of your child. There are a lot of community college out there that is known for, working with individuals with disability. Lone Star Community College is one that is good. And then we also have the Texas State Tech College. I believe it's in Richmond or Rosenberg, Texas. they are really great at working with kids with special needs. And check these out. If you've got a kid on the autism spectrum and they like all the, kind of the mechanical stuff, there's a lot of great programs for kids on the spectrum at Texas State Tech, and they've been doing a good job of working with individuals with disabilities. So just know that there's a lot of programs out there, and there is a place that your child can land as you're making these considerations. So another thing that we like to talk about is campus connections with Bloom Consulting. If you've never heard of Bloom Consulting, you should check out their website. They have some cool programs out there, but campus connections is one of them. So maybe you have a student that could thrive and do well on the university, on a four-year university program. We've got a lot of families that have done that. My daughter did that and graduated the program. But the campus connection program, it's really an innovative program it's really designed to be really a wraparound program, and they're going to pair the students with a connection coach, and they're going to provide mentoring and guidance and navigational support, and it's basically helping your student grow and empowering them to problem solve their concerns more effectively and be less reliant on mom and dad. And let's face it, our teens at this age, they don't like it as much as they used to when they were 4 years old. And so they don't always think that our advice is as great as they once did. And so taking yourself out of that coach mode and having somebody else that can maybe push them more effectively without the anger that comes along with that, and helping them grow. So this, they go to various campuses, and they're involved with various campuses all across the country, not just in Texas. And this wraparound program is $1,000 per month, private pay. But if it's in line with the IPE for your vocational rehab, it's possible that there could be sponsorship through the VR program that it could be covered if this is what is needed. So if the goal for getting your student to work is they're going to have such and such training at the university to be able to do the job that the goal is, and this is the type of support that they need to reach that goal, then it could be covered through your VR counselor. And these are all very, very personalized. I don't get to say what VR pays for and what they don't, but they have state and federally funded grants and programs that pay. And a lot of them can even pay for university classes or higher education classes as well. Okay, do we have any additional questions?
Yes, we had one more about guardianship. Is there a step-by-step list on how to navigate guardianship of a special needs foster child who cannot speak for himself to an intellectual disability?
So for the foster child, that's a loaded question, because a lot of times that's going to go through the Department of Family Services. And what happens at 18, there's usually paperwork and things like that. You know, it depends if there's going to be an adoption in place and things like that. So what I would say is you're going to have to go, if it's through the state, you're going to have to go back through the DPFS and ask about that. There, as far as step-by-step on those webinars, there is step-by-step, and it kind of talks about what forms are going to be needed, who needs to sign off on said forms, how the court process works, because it is a lawsuit for guardianship, basically, and people get served and there's a guardian ad litem. But if you have a child that is in foster care, you're going to have to work with your representative on that. And sometimes there are programs in place where that guardianship could be covered through that program. So it's worth checking out. Some counties in the state of Texas have free guardianship. Galveston County is one that I know. Now, you have to live there. You can't just go to Galveston County and get the free guardianship, right? But they have a grant in Galveston County. So if you happen to be in Galveston County, there you can contact the local courthouse to find out about that program. So how do we get started with special needs planning? You know, what is a planner versus an attorney? And we spend a lot of time talking about that because I think it's important for families to know the difference between a special needs planner, which is what we do at Consolidated Planning Group, versus a special needs attorney. We get calls all the time of, I need guardianship. I need to set up a special needs trust. I need to update my will. I need to set up a power of attorney or a healthcare power of attorney. The special needs attorney, they're the legal documents. I say they're the paper and we're the money. Okay, so when I say they're the paper, they're all the legal documents and all of the things that need to be in place. And you do need an attorney for these things. When it comes to special needs planning, this is not a DIY project. We work with freaky smart people, really, really smart people, highly intelligent. But this is not a do-it-yourself project when it comes to special needs planning. It is critically important that you have the money in the right buckets to preserve eligibility for state and federally funded programs. It's critically important that you know about these programs, know about the interest list, and know about these things. And the special needs attorney, so just like earlier when I was saying that, you know, there's 263,000 financial advisors out there and about 125 total have any background in special needs, all attorneys are not created equally either. Yes, they're very smart and they went to law school and they passed the bar. But a lot of attorneys are specialized in other things. So if your brother is a real estate attorney and he's going to set up your special needs trust for you for free, I suggest against that. I suggest working with an attorney that is specifically nuanced in special needs and understands the changing landscape and the changing law when it comes to special needs, understands the roadblocks to avoid, and so you can make sure that your documents are set up appropriately. I don't recommend downloading documents from the internet and getting them notarized. Often they're not state specific. Often they're not paying attention to the special needs laws and things along those lines. We work with a lot of attorneys all across the state. We're happy to provide referrals. The referrals that we provide, we don't work for them. They don't work for us. But they're attorneys that we know are nuanced specifically in special needs. They do a great job. Their fees are reasonable. And you're not going to go wrong. When you save money on your legal fees when it comes to planning for special needs, often the documents are not correct and you end up spending more money having them fixed. So I just want to mention that. So work with experts. You want to build a team of experts to help you plan for the future. Who are some of the other experts? We talked about the vocational rehab, the VR counselors. There are transition specialists and experts at the school. There are various programs outside of the school, private pay, like Bloom Consulting, for instance. They have programs to help close the gap for your kids with impediments to employment. Bloom Consulting does what they call vocational evaluation, and it can be paid for VR if VR recommends that, which they usually do. But a vocational evaluation is specifically going to tell us what those gaps to employment are. And so if you start learning about those sooner versus later, then you can start working with your student and start implementing those programs to help close those gaps. So we definitely recommend that as well. So as it relates to getting started with special needs planning, we want you to gather all your documents. What does that look like? Your planning documents, these are all of your statements. What do you already have in place? What legal documents do you already have in place? What savings and investments do you already have in place? Stocks, bonds, mutual funds, life insurance, disability, long-term care through your employers or outside of your employers. All of those documents, those social security statements are going to matter for mom and dad, because when we have a kid that has a disability that started prior to age 22, they have the ability to be covered under a parent's record for childhood disability benefits when a parent either retires or goes on disability or dies. So these are some of those documents that you'll want to be gathering. Most of the people that we work with, they've already done some planning. We've got people that have done extensive planning. They may already have a special needs trust in place. They've done a lot of saving and investing over the years. We have people that are already retired. We have people that have been working with advisors for years, but their advisors are not nuanced in special needs. And we have other people that are just getting started. They've had this on their list and they need to do it, but they haven't got it off the ground yet. So whether you're just beginning, or maybe you started and then you put it on the shelf and then you needed to revisit, we can meet you where you are on those types of things. And we're happy to partner with the other advisors that you have in place. So one of the things that we talk about, and this is, again, as a reference to the YouTube channel, the letter of intent. The letter of intent will help when someone has to step into your shoes. So, you know, we have wills and trusts and things like that, but the letter of intent, we actually have a template for this. It's a 20-page form fillable document that it's everything about your loved one with a disability. As parents, we have forgot more on what the details are than anyone will ever know about your child. But if you're incapacitated or if you have passed away, who's stepping into your shoes? Does the person stepping into your shoes know what you know? Do they know where to get it if they don't? And this is especially important. It's important for all of our loved ones with disabilities, but it's especially important for these kids that are nonverbal. This letter of intent is really going to have things like all of the diagnoses, names, address, and phone numbers of doctors, names and dosages and milligrams of medications and what they're for. It might have religious preferences. What county were they born in? Anything that you can think of, it's on there, but it also has free space for a parent to write their heart. If you're reading this, I want you to know this is my heart for my child. This is what I hope for. This is what we've set up. And it talks about other things, policies, special needs trust, things that are going to be funding the special needs trust. If the child is getting SSI or Medicaid, if they're getting a Medicaid waiver, all of these little details and how they reach people to talk about these details and, you know, should they need to, it's going to be in that letter of intent. So you can check out the webinar on that on the YouTube channel, and you can reach out to us directly if you need a copy of that letter of intent. And I would say, because it's 20 pages, you know, give yourself some grace. If you don't have one, put a goal to get it finished in the next 3 months. It's a lot of information, and sometimes it can be a little bit emotional as well, because you're putting all of this stuff in there, and it's all in your face. And you live it, you eat, sleep, and breathe it every single day, but sometimes it's just a lot. So give yourself some grace when you're filling out that letter of intent. And we want you to consider your vision. Think about your vision of the future for your family and your loved one, but specifically think about your vision for you, and if you're married, you and your spouse. I often say that this is the marathon, not the sprint. If we have a child that's going to have care needs for the rest of their lives, not ours, this is a long journey. Our vision of retirement is a little bit different because our kids don't sail off into the sunset when they're 22 years old, or I guess it's later for some people too. But if you have a child that could be with you for years and years and years, your semblance of retirement, of how you might travel or how you might do X, Y, Z, everybody has hopes and dreams on that. But when you're thinking about your vision, you need to build in self-care. We're, as parents, we're guilty of always doing for everyone and our kids and everything like that to our own deficit and demise, right? And so if we're in for the marathon, not the sprints, we got to keep ourselves as healthy as possible for as long as possible. And so having respite built into your vision, respite for that special trip that you wanted to take or the special things that you hope to be able to do, in retirement and balance. You know, it's just like there's no reward. Like if you're, you know, you're working and someone says, well, I haven't taken vacation in 15 years. Well, there's no reward for that. You know, the reward for that is a heart attack. And there's no reward for endless care without respite for yourself and respite for your soul. And so having some balance in that is going to keep you vibrant and keep you able to be the caregiver that you hope to be for as long as you hope to be that. So planning for the future is really planning now, taking the steps now to put your plan in place is going to answer some of these questions. How much do you need to fund a special needs trust? We get calls every single week. I'm setting up a special needs trust, or I already have a special needs trust set up, but I need to know how much do I need to fund the future care for my loved one with a disability. Where does the money come from? How do we pay for this when we're gone? How do we leave the money appropriately so that way it maintains their eligibility for state and federally funded programs? How do we maximize Social Security for our whole family? As I mentioned, our kids with a disability that started prior to age 22, they have the ability to be covered under a parent's record. We have some spouses that have been caregivers. They have stayed home. They have not worked outside the home, and they will be drawing off of the spouse. We have the only software out there that tells us exactly when and how to pull the trigger on Social Security to maximize the benefits for the whole family, including the individual with a disability. It's the only software out there that takes into consideration a disabled adult child. And that really helps in planning. While nobody's going to get rich off of Social Security benefits, it's not nothing in retirement. And when we have a spouse, you know, the worker, the spouse, and a special needs child, and in some families they have more than one special needs child, it adds up to be quite a bit. And when you're, you know, turning on these benefits without the analysis, you're turning it on blindly. And we have seen hundreds of thousands, up to $1 million in savings over a person's lifetime by simply turning on your Social Security at the right time. So we can definitely help with those types of things. So another thing to consider is how your child's care is going to be funded in the future. We've talked about preserving eligibility for state and federally funded programs. For example, we're talking about SSI and Medicaid. We're talking about Social Security disability and Medicare. These programs are confusing. And if you've been confused by this, good news is you're not alone. Everyone has been confused by this. They have all these acronyms that they throw around. Some of them sound different, but they're actually the same. Some of them sound the same, but they're actually different. And it's hard to keep it all straight. We have complete webinars on Government Benefits 101. That's the name of the webinar for these government benefits. And you should totally check that out because we go deep and wide on these different programs. But SSI is a means-based program. It is for the disabled. And it is for the indigent. And indigent is determined by less than $2,000 in the person's name. So we've been clipping along all these years, and these kids, when they were prior to age 18, most families are making too much money. They have more than $2,000 assets in their name. And although their child is disabled, they did not qualify for SSI and Medicaid because prior to the child turning 18, it's based off of the parent's income and assets, not the child. That all changes when the child turns 18. So when we're thinking about transitioning, thinking about, do your children have any accounts in their name other than an ABLE account or a special needs trust? If they do, they should not have more than $2,000 in any sources. So if grandma and grandpa bought savings bonds 18 years ago and they're worth $2,000, those savings bonds should be moved to an ABLE account. And there's no such thing as hiding the money. So if you have more than $2,000 in your child's name, legitimate ways to get it below $2,000 would be to spend it down for the individual's care needs, whatever that might be for their benefit, and have proof of that. You can move the money to an ABLE account. We're going to talk about the ABLE account in just a second. And, you know, so ABLE account, or if it's the child's money, it could go to a first party special needs trust. Okay, so those are places that you can move the money or you can spend it down. Simply closing the account or moving the money to your account, those are not legitimate ways to do it. And the Social Security Administration will find that and they'll deny the application for SSI. So SSI, means-based programs for the indigent and the disabled. Right now, the monthly amount for SSI is $914 per month. If your loved one is getting SSI and they are not working and they are not getting $914 a month, then that tells me that a rent or a fair share agreement needs to be submitted indicating that your loved one is paying rent. And then you need to move rent money from the SSI account to whoever they're paying rent, if it's a parent or if it's an actual facility, then your case will be increased to the 914 a month. Sometimes people are getting less than 914 a month because the person is working. If the person is working in general, and it'll go in detail in the Government Benefits 101 webinar, but in general, 50% of whatever their gross money earnings per month will be reduced the SSI. It will reduce the SSI the following month. So in the example, they don't count the first $85, so not to get in the weeds with it, but if we just said that the child's earnings were $500 gross per month, in general, $250 would be would reduce their SSI. So the 914 would basically be reduced by 250 for the following month. So it's not that your child cannot work and get SSI. They absolutely can. The key for the SSI application is if the child is working, it's okay that you apply for SSI when the child is working, as long as they're not earning more than the substantial gainful amount, which for 2023 is $1,470 gross earnings per month. Okay. So Social Security Retirement, and Medicare it's confusing because we say, okay, wait a second, my child is disabled. So why, again, do they not qualify for Social Security disability? It would only make sense that they would qualify for Social Security disability. But SSI is a means-based program. It's an entitlement program for the indigent and the disabled. The Social Security program, as workers, we pay into this program. So you get your Social Security statement, which you don't get them in the mail anymore. You have to download them now. But it tells how many working quarters you have. You're paying in to Social Security. So that way, if one day you are disabled, then it will pay a disability benefit, or one day when you retire, it will pay retirement benefits. And the important thing to get is 40 quarters. So that's basically 10 years of working experience. So most of our kids haven't worked. So when you apply for SSI, they also apply for SSDI, and you get a letter in the mail saying that they've been denied. The letter is saying that they've been denied for SSDI, not SSI. The SSI application is still processing, but they have rightfully been denied for SSDI because they never paid into the system. Okay. So they never have paid into the system. They don't have 40 quarters. They're not insured. And that's why that Social Security disability was denied. But what I was mentioning earlier is even our kids that can't ever work can be covered for under a parent's record for Social Security disability once a parent has turned on their Social Security disability or their Social Security retirement. Any disabled children whose disability started prior to age 22 can be eligible for childhood disability benefits under a parent's record. And what that means is, for instance, if your record as a parent, when you turn on your benefits, it's $4,000 a month, your child is going to be entitled to 50% of that. It's not going to reduce your benefits. It is going to keep your benefits whole, and they would be entitled to $2,000 a month, 50% of your record. That will continue as long as your loved one remains disabled and as long as you remain alive. At your passing, the benefits will be increased to 75% of your amount, and will continue as long as the individual remains disabled. Once they move on to these childhood disability benefits, you don't get SSI and childhood disability benefits at the same time. You get whichever's more. It is possible that you can get both, but one would be reduced for the other. And so the total amount that they would be eligible for, sometimes it's 100% Social Security, sometimes it's a portion of SSI and a portion of Social Security to make the person whole. After 24 months, the individual will be eligible for Medicare, and that will make them dual eligible for Medicaid and Medicare. Courtney, do we have any questions?
No, we do not have any questions. Oh, I'm sorry. I see one from Teresa. How do we set up an ABLE account?
Okay, so an ABLE account is organized under the tax code 529A. This is for individuals who had a disability that started prior to age 26. In 2026, that age limit is going up to age 46. The disability needed to occur prior to age 46 starting in 2026. But for right now, it's subject to the gift tax exclusion. You can put up $17,000 a year into an ABLE account. It's 529A under the tax code 529A for ABLE. If the individual is working, you can put an additional $13,590. And the account grows tax-free as tax-free distributions. And so whenever you need money, basically you basically don't want them to have more money than $2,000. So the additional money can be put into the ABLE account. We help people set up ABLE accounts all day long. Because it grows tax-free and there's tax-free distributions and it won't be counted against you for state and federally funded programs, the ABLE account is a smart program to consider. Also, you should know that there are special contributions and distribution limits. And basically, if the distribution from the ABLE account can be construed as achieving a better life for an individual with a disability, it can be paid for out of an ABLE account without taxes or penalties as well. Okay. So let's see here. All right. So moving on, as it relates to, I want to just actually mention one other thing on the ABLE account. Some people say, well, why should I have a special needs trust in an ABLE account? It's important to have both because number one, you never want to have more than $100,000 in an ABLE account or you're going to disqualify for SSI and Medicaid, whereas you can have an unlimited amount of money in a special needs trust. Number two, an ABLE account can pay for food and shelter without a reduction to SSI. And while you can pay for food and shelter out of a special needs trust, there is a reduction to SSI, a one-third reduction to SSI. So that's why it's handy to have both. We have another question.
Yes, Teresa asked if the income limit is the same. So for disabled children already receiving RSDI on their parents' work record, the income limit is 1470, or is the income limit still 1470 per month?
Yes, that's a great question. Thanks for asking. So for SSI, 1470 gross earnings per month. SGA, the substantial gainful amount, changes every year, but this is for 2023. That is during the claim. So once you start the claim, while they're processing the claim, if they earn more than 1470 gross per month, then they're going to be denied SSI. However, the 1470 gross per month, the substantial gainful amount, runs the life of the claim if the individual is on SSDI or childhood disability benefits under a parent's record. 1470 gross per month. If the child earns more than 1470 gross per month, the Social Security Administration basically says, this kid isn't disabled anymore. And they will lose the ability to be under a parent's record for childhood disability benefits. Another reason that a kid could lose the ability to be covered under a parent's record is if they get married. They will lose the ability permanently. Once you lose the ability to be considered a disabled adult child, you've lost it and you're not getting it back. So it's really important that you definitely understand how that works. Okay. The other thing that you guys need to be aware of, if you have any kids that are getting a Medicaid waiver like HCS, Texas Home Living, Community First Choice, the income limits for the waiver are 300% of SSI, which is $2,742 per month, $914 a month times three, $2,742 are the income limits for the waiver, and they count the income under SSDI and any employment income. Okay, so that's what they're going to count for the waivers. And what's counted on the different programs is different. So you definitely want to be very careful with that. The Social Security Red Book is a book that you can download from the internet. and it tells you exactly how working and how different things count against a person who is on SSI or on the SSDI program. So when do I need a special needs trust and guardianship? A special needs trust is going to preserve the eligibility for your loved one for these state and federally funded programs while providing resources for your special needs child for their benefit. So a special needs trust is how we want to leave money. We never want to name our child directly as a beneficiary in anything that we have, and that includes life insurance. That includes 401ks, 403bs, investment accounts. If we want to leave money for the benefit of said child, it needs to be left to the special needs trust for the benefit of said child, and then it won't make them lose these benefits. We talked about guardianship earlier, so I'm going to move on from that. And again, I can't stress enough the importance of having a qualified attorney work on these things. So here are some transition and residential programs across the state. This is just a small list. We have a very long list. Some of these programs have transition programs, day and transition programs. Some of them have residential programs. Some programs take waivers. Some programs do not. So you're going to want to choose wisely. Some of these programs have waiting lists. Some of them don't. So if you're thinking that the next step post high school is a transition program, even there could be a transition program to the transition program. You might do the transition program, the 18 plus program in the public school, and then move on to another transition program because they might not be ready for higher education yet. But look at some of these programs. There's a lot of awesome ones out there. We've got a lot of families and a lot of these programs all across the state, and their loved one is having success and thriving. And the cool thing about a lot of these programs is it kind of gives them some autonomy from you. They find their tribe, they find their friends, and they have purpose. A lot of them have jobs. Maybe it's at where they're at, and maybe it's off the campus. But there are a lot of opportunities with these programs for your loved one with a disability to really enjoy their life and what they're doing and, you know, move themselves forward. So, guys, we've talked about a lot of things today, and we're running out of time. So you guys are going to get a copy of today's slides, and they'll have all of the links for everything in there as well. And we'll also have a link for our upcoming webinars that you can register for. You know, some of the things that you need to keep on your radar, I think we talked about most of these things, future care cost estimate, Texas waivers and interest list. We have an entire webinar on the Texas waivers and interest list. By the way, I just want to tell you guys a fresh new piece of news. Forever, if you had your child on the Texas waivers interest list, you had to call your local intellectual disability authority and simply ask them where your child is on the list. And a lot of families do this a couple times a year or whatever. Just this week, I learned that your TexasBenefits.com, your login for Medicaid, you can create one, your TexasBenefits.com now has a link on their homepage for Medicaid waivers, for Texas waivers, and you can pull in your kid's case and you can actually see exactly where they are on the interest list. I think it's totally awesome. So that's CLASS, HCS, Texas Home Living. So if you haven't seen that, check that out. That is totally an upgrade. So guys, we have webinars on every single one of these topics, ABLE accounts, the waivers, SSI, SSDI, special needs trust, what you need to know about those, guardianships, alternative to guardianship, and the post-high school options specifically for individuals with a disability. So like I said, on that Consolidated Planning Group YouTube channel, we have over 300 webinars out there, so you can kind of check them out for the step that you're on, and we will also have upcoming webinars as well. One last thing that I just want to mention before we go, I suggest if it is on your horizon that your loved one will live apart from you in some type of independent living community or something along those lines, we do suggest touring these communities early, getting yourself on the waiting list. Some of these waiting lists could be 5 to 7 years. Some places don't have waiting lists, but by putting yourself on a waiting list, it's going to give you freedom of choice to say yes in the future. But if you're not on the waiting list and you need to say yes in the future, you're not going to be able to. So I suggest starting touring these places. Make a day of it. Have lunch. Go tour. These places are really awesome, and you will find that the residents that are there, they're happy, they're thriving, they have friendships. It's not sticking them somewhere. There are some really cool places out there. So take some time to you know, take those tours and get yourself on the interest list for those. A lot of them, you know, require a tour prior to putting you on the list. Guys, we work on a collaborative team here at Consolidated Planning Group. Again, we're nationally certified as Social Security advisors, members of the Special Needs Planning Academy. We always offer free consultations. So if anything that we said today, you say, okay, gosh, I need help with these things, reach out. This QR code, if you hover over that and you're going to get a copy of these slides, it'll take you to our calendar where you can schedule a free initial consultation, and we can go deeper on the questions that you had. You know, I think when we talk about so many things, that there's a lot of things that pop up in people's minds, but we can definitely help you. You're definitely in the right place. Check out that YouTube channel, our Facebook page for any upcoming events that we may have. And Courtney, I would just like to say, as always, it was a pleasure partnering with you again today. And we will look forward to partnering again with you. I believe it's in October. So
yes, we are excited. Thank you, Allison.
Yes.
And thank you for everybody that joined today.
Thanks, everyone. Have a great afternoon. Take care.